Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Texas Utilities versus Timmons.
Good morning. I, along with Mr. Kevin Croy here, represent Texas Electric Utilities Company. This case is about the attractive nuisance doctrine. The attractive nuisance doctrine was introduced in the United States in 1873, and it was quickly adopted and applied in the state of Texas. Now, the original doctrine focused on the attractive nature of the instrumentality or the condition and created an inferred invitation so that children were not considered to be trespassers. In 1922, this court in McCoy refused to restrict this doctrine to the railroad turntable cases to which it was originally applied. McCoy is a case involving the attractive nuisance doctrine and electricity. Now, after McCoy, several other cases were decided that involved electricity and the attractive nuisance doctrine, and that includes the Johns versus Fort Worth Power and Light Company, which the Court of Appeals in this case relied on. However, after that case, there were several other cases decided, in fact, more cases decided, which hold that a tower or a pole that carries electrical wires is not an attractive nuisance.
Ms. Wilkins, what concerns me is the testimony that the tower was like a jungle gym to children in a residential neighborhood and as easy to climb as monkey bars. Would you address that?
Certainly. There are pictures of this tower in the record. It is a rectangular tower. It's not one with the broad base that comes out and down. It simply goes right straight up, has the cross-angled irons that are perhaps 2 feet apart. It does create steps for children with legs long enough. There is the barricade on this, and it's 12 and a half feet off of the ground. Now, the presence of a condition where it's located is in fact a consideration that the courts have looked at in determining the application of the attractive nuisance doctrine. The courts look at whether it's in an urban area or rural area,
but here, close to. Here is clearly a residential area. You can see the homes in the pictures. I mean, why find
Yes,
it?
Your Honor, a residential area did grow up around this tower after it had been constructed in 1913.
And the little sign you have there is faded?
Well, there's a picture of the sign in the record also, and it can clearly be read to read danger, keep off, high voltage.
Well, let's talk a moment about the barricade. It looks like in the picture that is part of the record that the barbed wire is flat so that you would just step on it, and of course the bottom of a shoe would not deter you.
Well, in order to step on it from the top, you would have to, of course, be able to climb around it. And the barricade extends out from the tower itself approximately 19 inches, which means that you're on the tower and have to reach around, and you have to be fairly agile, which of course a very small child would not be able to reach that far. If you did make it around and step on the barbed wire, then I assume, as like barbed wire anywhere, it's going to give, just like in a fence set up. Ma'am?
Just as it did here.
Well,
didn't the expert testify that it looked like it had been stepped on before?
The plaintiff's expert affidavit regarding his inspection of the barricade surrounding Tower 10, which is the barricade at issue in this case, after the accident, did indicate that it was sagging, which would be consistent with Billy Byram having climbed over it. I don't think that you can just take it from that, that the barricade is sagging because children are consistently climbing above the barricade. And I'm not trying to say the barricade is not relevant because the Court of Appeals imputed that we had knowledge that children were climbing because we put it up there. But it is relevant, but it's relevant in a different kind of way because the court consistently held it where you have restrictions on access that such you can assume that the children are not trespassing there. In other words, gives you a reason, doesn't give you a reason to anticipate the presence of children.
Ms. Wilkins, Billy did not get injured because he touched the live wire. He was injured because of the phenomenon of arching. I was not aware of that. I dare say that none of the members of the court perhaps were aware of that. And are you contending that the arching phenomenon of electricity is common knowledge?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the arcing of, I mean, the principle of arcing is known to anybody that walks across the carpet and reaches for a door. That is arcing, that little spark of electricity. And if I understand the court, it's whether if you are standing close to a high voltage wire, whether you know electricity will arc from that into your body, isn't it? And yes, I think that, I'm not really sure that that is what the question this court needs to be looking at. The test is whether the child appreciates the risk of danger generally. And this boy knew these wires were here, and he knew they were high voltage wires, and he knew that electricity was dangerous and that he could get hurt.
If he touched them.
Well, I think that the fact that he knew electricity was dangerous is sufficient. The courts in other jurisdictions have actually rejected an argument that arcing is a specific risk. You cannot segregate arcing from these wires or from being near these wires, and that is the dangerous condition of which he was aware.
But is it critical to your argument for the court to find that this arcing phenomenon is common knowledge?
Yes.
If we were to disagree with you, do you lose?
Well, I think if the court is going to say that arcing is a specific risk of which he must be aware, as opposed to awareness of a danger in going about the premises, which is what is the test under the attractive nuisance doctrine, then I think so. But I don't know how the court can say that we can recognize specific or carve off specific risk off of a dangerous condition. That's like saying that a child has to know the specific risk at the bottom of a pit filled with water as opposed from the pit itself, which is what Maxie was addressing. And if that is what indeed the child must know, then I think the dissent in Maxie would have ended up being the decision in this court.
Isn't there some evidence indicating that some children had been climbing on this pole in the past, right?
Well, there is evidence that from the two individuals that were with Mr. Byram, that they had in the past climbed, but the evidence is not that they climbed to the top of this tower. The evidence is that we climbed on this tower. They said not this high, not beyond the barricade. Nobody saw us. So when you're looking at the knowledge of TU, there has to be something there that we would know children are climbing in close proximity to these wires, which is where this dangerous condition is.
How tall is the tower?
The tower is about 90 feet tall.
Where are the wires?
They're at the very top. And the report from the officer estimates that he fell from approximately 90 feet on his way down, which means he had gone up and was coming back through. There are three sets of wires that you'll see on the pictures.
street that the barbed wire going up the tower?
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. That didn't come out right. Did it? There's three sets of arms that come out with high voltage wires, one here and then above that and then at the very top. This court needs to look at what the purpose of the attractive nuisance doctrine is when it's deciding this case, and that is to protect children from risks that they don't realize.
Well,
it's not to protect
them. Ms. Wilkins, isn't this exactly what happened in McCoy, the facts in this case? And don't we have a summary judgment case here, and the question is whether TU proved as a matter of law?
Well, I think you're asking me whether McCoy should be controlling just because it exists. And McCoy holds that the attractive nuisance doctrine doesn't apply just to a particular kind of case. It applies to cases based on their particular facts.
Well, it said that the boy, without coming in contact with the wires, received a severe electrical shock when he climbed within a danger zone. That's exactly what we have here in this case, don't we?
That's what is alleged in this case, and that's what took place in the CPNL versus Burke case, which was decided after McCoy, and that's a writ refused case. So we have two areas that arcing is involved.
Does the summary judgment evidence that you rely on show that this arcing situation was known to the public in that vicinity and was known particularly to children of 14 years of age in the vicinity?
I think the point I'm trying to make to
yes or no.
The summary judgment evidence with respect to arcing is simply the squib in the officer's report. There is no evidence about arcing otherwise, whether it is known or not known.
So there's no evidence to support a summary judgment as a matter of law that attractive nuisance doesn't apply in the facts of this case as articulated in McCoy.
As articulated in McCoy?
Well,
yes.
And if the facts are the same and you didn't prove it as a matter of law, then your summary judgment failed.
I disagree with that.
What was your burden in the trial court then?
Well, my burden is to negate an essential element or elements of the attractive nuisance doctrine as it currently exists in today, and that's the restatement of tort section 339. The elements here are to use knowledge of trespassing children and Billy Byram's knowledge of the condition or his appreciation of the risk in going to the place where that condition exists. Is my position that the risk in this case is the danger of electricity, that he knew that, he knew it was dangerous to go up there, he knew he should avoid those wires, and he didn't. He, because of whatever reason, chose to climb this tower a great distance, to climb around a barricade and encounter what he knew to be a dangerous situation.
Could the reason be that he or some other kids had climbed the tower before and had never had an electrical shock, therefore they didn't really appreciate the danger of being electrocuted because they had gone down this path before?
Well, the danger of electricity is electrocution. And I'm not trying
that.
To be smart, but there's no evidence that anybody had ever gone that high. Perhaps because they realized the risk in getting that close.
Let me see if I understand your argument. You're saying it's inconsequential. Whether he touched the wires or the arcing phenomena was the thing that happened, it's of no moment. The result is the same. Because of danger, of electricity is a danger. Whether it happened by touching the wire, physical contact, or the arcing phenomenon. Is that your argument?
That the presence of electricity.
So the answer is yes. That's your argument.
And that is the risk that had to be appreciated in this case and was, in fact, undisputedly appreciated by Mr. Byram.
Is there some zone of danger above a certain point? In other words, could you safely climb 20 feet and not be injured?
Well, most courts that have addressed electricity have just, in this state and elsewhere, is just that electrical wires are to be, people just know to avoid them. And I personally wouldn't get...
No, that's not my question. In climbing the tower...
Is there a zone? I would say below the barricade, there is absolutely nothing to suggest that there is any dangerous condition existing below that barricade. Above that barricade, you have several feet to go before you reach a place where the wires are. Is it 20 feet? Is it 2 feet? You have to be real close. I can't tell you that because there's not any evidence in the record, and I would say that, you know, having established this barricade, that it is noticed to everyone to stay off of that particular portion of the tower.
Do we have to overrule any cases to agree with you?
No, you do not.
Do you have to disapprove any cases?
No, because the attractive nuisance doctrine is applied to a case based on its facts.
The McCoy case can stand?
McCoy, if the court examines the McCoy case, it will see several distinguishing factors, including the fact that that accident occurred 1 year after the tower had been erected. There were ladders on it that extended all the way to the ground. There are distinguishing factors in that case, which is why just relying on it, because it's already determined this question, shouldn't be the test.
Insofar as the risk of arcing is concerned as opposed to physical contact with the wires, in order to agree with you, would we have to hold that, say, that the knowledge of the arcing is immaterial? But as long as someone had knowledge of the risk of the electricity, we'd have to disapprove of that part of it, wouldn't we?
I think that you're talking about McCoy's statement regarding the knowledge of arcing.
Yes.
That you would have to disapprove that. No, I don't think you would, because you have to look at when that case was decided.
We would, but we'd have to just say that was in 1922.
Well, can you say, though, that it's not a known danger when in 1922 this court wrote a case and recognized that it is a danger of being near an electrical wire? I think you have to come back to the question of what did this boy, because of his youth, appreciate about where he was and what was presented by those wires. There are Texas cases that do actually, that the danger is working around or being around electricity, not arcing. So I think that holding would be totally consistent with those cases.
What, if any, weight should we give to the fact that this young man was intoxicated, and number two, that he had some sort of a learning disability?
Well, intoxication, of course, does not lessen or diminish the standard of care that someone must exercise, and I don't think the court can use that or the plaintiff can rely on that to excuse what he must appreciate. Indeed, it's an objective standard anyway. It's what the class of children of that age and intelligence. Respect to your second question regarding the information on his learning disability, like I said, it is an objective standard. The Soledad case that's referred to in the brief did say, well, yes, you look at that, but once you take it into account, then you still go back and look at children of that same age, intelligence, and maturity, and I think that's the test that is consistently applied across the United States.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments for response.
Yes,
Mr.
Travis Miller will present arguments for response.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, this is a case where Billy Byron was killed because he failed to appreciate the hazard that the defendant was well aware of and failed to protect him from. We don't disagree with the fact that Billy Byram understood electricity's hazards. That's a given. He's 14 years of age. I understood at 14. I know you did. The defense wants to point out that 1922 standards were different than they are in 1996. In fact, I sort of think that works to Billy Byram's benefit. Electricity is so common today, it is around us everywhere. I've got it here in front of me. We tend to take it for granted. The whole purpose of the attractive nuisance doctrine was to protect children, not adults, but children, from risks they could not appreciate, something they could not understand.
Didn't he appreciate the risk, or shouldn't he have appreciated it because he was warned not to climb the tower?
Oh, yes, sir. I think he appreciated the risk. The tower was tall and he could fall. There have been courts that held 6-7-year-olds that appreciate falling as a risk. I think he appreciated the risk that if he touched the wires, he was going to be electrocuted. In fact, in the testimony, in the summary judgment, the defendant's own excerpts, Billy, on the prior occasions he'd climbed the tower and his friend told him to come on down, said, I'm not high enough. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm down at this level. Billy wasn't aware that there was a zone of danger that came down from the wires that could kill him, even though he never reached the height of the wires.
But he knew he was trespassing.
He did.
He knew there was a dangerous condition that he had to crawl across the barricade to get to.
He did, and so did all the other kids who had figured out the two different techniques for crawling across that barrier.
Was there any evidence that Texas Utilities had actual constructive knowledge that children were climbing above the barricade?
Texas Utilities put in pretty good evidence that they had no actual knowledge. I think Texas Utilities had very good constructive knowledge. And to look at constructive knowledge, you have to go back to the factors dealing with the location, the design, the construction, and the habits of the people surrounding this particular tower. This tower is only 3 foot by 3 foot wide. It's sitting to some 20 feet from someone's front porch. There's no barriers around the tower. It's built literally like a ladder with the cross sections where you can go right up and down. The kids played on it like a jungle gym. All the kids climbed it. The police have been called up.
Constructive knowledge above the barricade. The barricade is 12 and a half feet off the ground.
Well, we had constructive knowledge because the barricade, not only on this particular tower, but other towers, was sagging and the wires were bent and sagging. In one of the cases cited by the defense, O'Shea, I think it was, the court specifically held in that case on a fence, sagging barbed wire was an indicator that we could confer, a jury could infer, that children had been in fact going over the barrier.
How often did the record show that Texas Utilities serviced or monitored?
I don't believe there's any summary judgment evidence on that factor, Your Honor. Their basic summary judgment evidence was we never got any actual knowledge. And their contention, as I understand it in this case, is once we put up some sort of barrier or take some action, then we have to receive actual knowledge. Our duty ends there. And I think that's one of the issues of the case.
In 1922, this court decided that 14-year-olds wouldn't know about arcing. Can't we, 72-odd years later, 74-odd years later, conclude that 14-year-olds now know about lightning, is arcing, static electricity, is arcing? Can't we today, I mean, there's a judicial pronouncement that arcing exists in 1922. Can't this court today decide that maybe Ms. Byram didn't know that if he got within 3 feet of a wire or 10 feet of a wire, that electricity would jump from the wire to him, but 74 years later, 14-year-olds now know that electricity jumps from one place to another
wire? It's a good question, Your Honor. In this particular case, none of the witnesses knew of arcing. From Billy being the youngest, 14 years old, to Mr. Brown, who was 44 years of age, none of them knew of the hazard. Ms. Timmons' mother didn't know
what lightning was.
Oh, I don't think they know what lightning is. We're not dealing with ordinary electrical wires here. We're dealing with, I think it was a 64 or 69 kilovolt wire, uninsulated. The electrical wires you and I and everyone else around here see on a daily basis are insulated wires. Romex or standard wiring.
But of course, wires, insulated wires you can touch, and he at least knew he can't touch these for some reason.
Right, but he did not know, and I'm a son of an electrical engineer, and I did not know until we got this case that the electricity could jump down the tower and hit you. You know, we all see the insulators these wires are on, and we assume the electricity is going to take that path of least resistance along the wire. And I don't understand to this day the principle why it jumps down the tower and hits a boy.
So what could have the defendant done in this case to prevent such action as this from occurring?
A couple things, Your Honor. One, the warning in this case, the only warning, was a 10x10 flat, a 10x3 flat. And of that 10x3 flat, only the top 3 inches actually had a warning. They could have made it clear by warning or by public education that...
Public education?
TVS, things of that nature.
Stay off the towers?
Not only stay off the towers, but why to stay off the towers? You don't have to touch the wires to get killed.
Why does it take a genius to know that if you crawl up 90 feet in the air on a 3x3 tower, you might get hurt?
Even a 14-year-old understands he might get hurt, Your Honor, and I concede that fact. He understood he might...
If you stayed off the tower, you wouldn't have to know about arcing, touching wires or anything.
That's correct, but the purpose of the doctrine is to protect us from hidden dangers. If he had fallen, as the Court of Appeals said, if he had fallen off the tower, we wouldn't have this issue. If he grabbed,
why is it particular? Why do you have to know about the particular risk?
You have to know we're trying to stop children from exercising that impulsiveness that gets them in trouble. And if we're going to do that, we got to get down to that level of the child and tell him why he's going to get hurt.
If, for example, the electricity could arc down to 12 feet above the ground, where you could get up there without any trouble.
I guarantee you there'd be a barrier 30 feet around that and no one would approach you because you, right, you wouldn't know where that zone of danger was.
Right. But when it's up 90 feet, why do you need to know about arcing?
Well, because TU and everybody for years and years in the case history, I think, documents it, knows that kids are going to climb towers. You're attracted to these things. That's the whole point of the doctrine.
What if one of the crossbars, if they, you know, they crawl up, apparently, according to the evidence, by stepping in the little, where the crossbars met together on the way up. What if one had been loose and the bar had come loose and he'd fall?
We'd have a terrible case, and I wouldn't be here for the court because I would have been poured out in the Court of Appeals, and I wouldn't have been up here, Your Honor.
Why would you expect a 14-year-old to appreciate that the tower might not be well constructed?
Because that's the risk of finding any hole or any tower that you haven't got any experience with. It's the risk of falling.
But why wouldn't TU have an obligation to keep it in good condition?
I think they would, Your Honor. Maybe I'm misstating that. If the question is, if he climbs up the tower and breaks because it's too weak to support his weight, he knows, and any child knows, that this tower is not necessarily constructed for his climbing purposes. That's a risk he assumes. It's not a ladder. This isn't a case where he went up steps. And so that's a risk he assumes. It doesn't have actual built handholds. It's not like you have the handholds that are built on the utility poles that are designed to hold a man's weight. So he has to assume that risk when he goes up, and he has to be aware of it.
Which McCoy and Johns both have.
Yes. In those cases, we also had older kids, and one of them, that was a 16-year-old, they had steps or ladders. In this case, we had the equivalent of a ladder. We had a barrier, but it was a barrier that was so inadequate that everybody in the neighborhood knew how to get around it. There were two different techniques. I think one of the boys said, one of the kids in the neighborhood could just slide between the wires that were so loose.
Constable, you started to say something about that the police have been called complain about these boys out there. What was that?
Yes, sir. Two of the witnesses testified. Mr. Kochenauer testified that he himself had the police called on him for hanging around the tower and was told to leave. That's a public record and could have put TU on notice. One of the other witnesses, I think Mr. Brown, testified he was aware of police being called one or two times on children on or around the tower. That's the only summary judgment evidence we have on that, and it's not real specific,
but it's something to put them on notice of the hazard and the propensity of children to climb and play on the tower.
Does the record show what grades Billy was in?
No, ma'am. I do not believe it does.
Why should the attractive nuisance doctrine not be weakened in this situation because of Billy's intoxication?
I don't think the intoxication is a factor at all. I think it's an objective standard applied. I don't think his intoxication is a defense, and I don't think that the defendant ought to be required to anticipate intoxicated children. They're entitled to anticipate children. And I don't think the doctrine, I don't think it's applicable to the case one way or the other.
You mean to the legal question? I mean, certainly the jury's going to be able to consider that.
The jury will. We're talking about the legal issue here, the threshold issue on summary judgment that has us before the court today.
Are you saying, if I understand correctly, if there had been no wire here but just a 90-foot tower and this boy had climbed to the top and fallen, if I understand you correctly, the attractive nuisance doctrine would not apply?
That's my understanding of the case law, Your Honor. That hazard is so obvious of height and falling that a 14-year-old kid must recognize it. And I think the case law...
The general danger, in a sense, I guess the general danger, one of the general dangers of falling, climbing a 90-foot tower would be falling.
Yes, sir. I believe that the issue here is when we have a hazard...
Can you go one step further and say one of the general dangers of climbing a 90-foot tower where there are electrical wires is being electrocuted for one reason or the other, for any reason?
I think you could go so far as to say one of the things is you're going to place yourself in a position you might be electrocuted, but there's no evidence in this case, and I'll point back to the photographs of this tower. The wires are on three levels on outriggers. You can climb up the top of the tower, and you're still several feet from the wires. You'd have to lean way out and maybe jump out to touch the wires, just like on a telephone pole. So you can climb up that tower and never be in a position to even touch the wires, even if you fell.
But even though they didn't understand our people around Billy told him not to go up there because he was going to get electrocuted.
That's what one of the people said, is you could be electrocuted.
And what did the warning say?
The warning said danger, high voltage. That's all.
So what more could they have done?
I think very simply, they could have put a warning in there to explain to people that it's not necessary to touch the wires to be in danger, to be electrocuted. Danger, high voltage. You need not touch the wires to be electrocuted. Stay off the tower. They could also put a barrier up there, as the expert testified, that wouldn't have been so, I think his word was makeshift. They could have actually kept the kids from climbing up the tower simply by welding steel plates to put a smooth face on the inside and outside of the tower so they had no handholds. You know, if the electric company needs to get around that, they can bring up a truck and ladder. We've seen that, and I know you've all seen it on water towers around the country where they have a box that is locked on the ladder, and there's no way to get beyond it. Same principle applies. They could have put a barrier on these towers that would have been very easily constructed by anybody with a welding torch and been very difficult for any child to get around.
What is the summary judgment evidence about how close this child came to the wire?
The best summary judgment evidence, Your Honor, is from the witnesses, and their evidence was he was not all the way to the top. And in fact, one of the witnesses testified he was on his way down when they saw the flash.
But did you say there were three levels of wire?
There's three levels of wire. As to where he is in those levels of wire, there's no specific evidence unless you look at the police report that says he was near the top. But there's no quantification of how far up he was. He's near the top.
Is there any dispute at all about the fact that he did not touch the wire?
There's no dispute on that. As far as I know, Your Honor, the medical examiner's report and the people at TU examined the body said there was no entrance and exit wounds which you would have with the direct contact of the wire.
Did he die? I'm not clear. Did he die of the fall or the electrocution?
My understanding, Your Honor, he died, he was electrocuted. I think it's probably notwithstanding he would have died in all likelihood anyhow from the fall, but that's not a given.
You don't think there's a dispute that he was at the top of the tower?
Sir?
You don't think there's a dispute that he was at the top of the tower?
I don't think there's a dispute that he was near the top of the tower. But the two boys that testified said he was not at the top. He was near the top. And he was, in fact, coming down, finally heeding their warnings to come down on the tower. This is a case where we're dealing with multiple risks. And I know that the defendants cited the Ledbetter case where a girl was riding a pump and she didn't realize the exact nature of the injury, didn't realize she'd lose her leg by riding this oil pump. And they cite that as an indication that we only have to warn of the general hazard. If that was true, they carried it to its logical extension in this case, then the fact the boy was aware of the hazard of falling, which the courts have held, would definitely apply to 14-year-old, would mean their duty was over. Because they're aware of a hazard. We don't have to warn them that hidden, dangerous hazard. You go back to that Ledbetter case, I'll suggest that the court that decided that case would have come up to an entirely different decision if that little girl had walked up that oil pump and touched it, thinking she might ride it, and been electrocuted, not realizing that that pump was energized, because it's a hidden hazard. And that's the whole purpose of the attractive nuisance doctrine. Let's protect them from hazards they can't appreciate. Prosser on torts, cited in several of the cases we've got before us, pointed out one of the factors we have to look at is the difficulty in discerning the hazard, whether or not it's a deceptive hazard. In this case, electricity is known. It's conceded. But there's a particular, peculiar factor of electricity that's not known to children, not known to adults for the most part, that they need to warn against, they need to protect against. And in that case, the attractive nuisance ought to apply.
Is that the fact issue that you claim that the jury ought to resolve?
Yes, sir. I think the jury ought to be given an opportunity to determine whether or not the defendant in this case took reasonable care, once we get past the attractive nuisance doctrine, in preventing the children from being exposed to this risk.
Do you agree that the attractive nuisance doctrine is a negligence theory? Negligence is not a separate theory apart from attractive nuisance?
I think it's, the way I interpret the attractive nuisance doctrine is an exception to the trespass rule. And it sets the standard that has to be applied, so it would be a negligence theory, yes. In closing, I think what we're trying to do is determine not whether or not a child is exposed to a particular injury or understands a particular harm, but whether or not the risk that we're trying to protect them from has to be apparent, has to be something they can see. If we take the defendant's posture in this case, as long as we warn them from one risk, as long as we protect them from one risk, that's okay. And in this case, all you'd have to put on that tower is dangerous, a tall tower, if you took their theory to its logical conclusion. Our position is, if you've got a hidden, insidious danger that the average child is not going to be aware of, in a location where that child is going to be tempted to go because of their typical impulsive nature at that age, then you must warn the children off, explain to them what the hazard is, or prevent them from getting to the hazard.
Is your argument then that the warning danger of high voltage is insufficient?
In my opinion, it is, because
even though it equates to the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, the boy understood the wires were dangerous. And it made that point clear. He didn't touch those wires. So as far as it went, it was a great warning. But it didn't go far enough because it didn't tell about the hidden hazard. He couldn't see. If he could see the wires, he probably already knew about that without the warning. If the hazard he couldn't see, he didn't know about, he had to be warned against.
In this instance, there may only be several possible things that to kill a young person who went up on this tower, but in an oil field, there might be 20 or 30. Their duty to warn of each and every one of those, and then the warning gets so long that no 14-year-old
That's one of the risks of warnings that the experts always argue about, Your Honor. I don't think you have to warn about every specific hazard, but I think when you have a hazard that's hidden in that nature, you must warn about the nature of the hazard so the child can appreciate it. We're trying to communicate to children in such a way that they can appreciate the situation.
But if there's more ways you can die here than you possibly could ever know of.
Yes, sir. And
would that?
But we have a hazard that's been known since 1922. It's had many court opinions written on it. It's been up this court before. And we've got to say, we must warn against that hazard. We can't ignore it. We can't ignore it for the last 75 years and say, gee, the situation's changed, now we don't have to warn anymore. It's still not known.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to correct one thing that counsel stated to this court. It is not the purpose of the attractive nuisance doctrine to protect children from their impulsiveness. It is to protect them from dangers that they are not aware of. And one of the factors that the courts have considered in determining whether the attractive nuisance doctrine should apply is the ability of the child to avoid the danger. That's what Massey said. The attractive nuisance doctrine applies, well, in looking at that, is the child, because of their youth, too young to be able to understand and appreciate the danger, and therefore is incapable of exercising the proper degree of care for their own safety. There's not any dispute in this case that Billy Byron was capable and able to exercise the proper degree of care for his safety by not climbing on this tower, given what he did in fact know. Now, I
take it you would agree with the counsel who concedes that if he had fallen off of the tower, that the attractive nuisance doctrine wouldn't apply, because even a 14-year-old knows that's a danger of climbing a tower.
Well, once again, you have to look at what does the youth, the test is, does the child, because of his youth, what does a 3-year-old know? Does a 2-year-old know? I mean, this court has held that, you know, at some point there's, an age beyond which a child is not capable of taking care of itself, and therefore I think in those situations you could have a case where, I've lost my train of thought. I'm sorry, Jesse.
Let me redirect you to the question. I guess you would agree with the respondent's counsel that there could be no application of the attractive nuisance doctrine to a case where the child climbs a 90-foot tower and falls off, because that's apparent. The danger of falling is apparent to...
To a 14-year-old child, yes, Your Honor, falling is most assuredly a danger.
And you've argued that the danger of touching the wires would be apparent because of even a 14-year-old's awareness of the danger of electricity.
Okay. That is what the Court of Appeals has accepted as I'm arguing that being near these wires is the danger of which a child is aware.
Well, I'm trying to divide it up.
Yes.
A little bit. So
that the danger of contact is well known and would bar the attractive nuisance doctrine in this case.
And so, but do you also argue that the danger of arcing is well known to a 14-year-old? Or, on the other hand, do you argue that that's irrelevant?
I'm arguing that is irrelevant because the danger, the hazard, is electricity and being near electricity, and he knew that.
So the danger, being aware of the danger of touching a wire, is the same for legal purposes as the danger of being near a wire and being electrocuted by arcing.
Yes.
For legal purposes, they're the same.
The hazard in this case is being in close proximity to these electrical wires, where because you fall, you do hit the wire, or because it arcs. But the hazard is being in close proximity to electrical wires that you know are dangerous.
What's wrong with opposing counsel's argument that, taken to its logical extension, you didn't need any warning at all because
being up 19 feet where the 20 feet where this barricade was, or 90 feet where the top of the tower was, is an extremely hazardous proposition in and of itself.
Well, I'm not sure I understand. Is that just don't warn at all?
Suppose there had been no warning. Why, under your argument, that it's just, if it's dangerous anyway, the precise nature of the danger doesn't need to be warned about. Why does it even matter that there happens to be a little electricity up there somewhere?
It's
just dangerous per se to be that high, and that is a generally appreciated danger by a child of the age of the deceased.
Well, if I understood your question, is we don't have to warn about it being high, but that's an easily observable thing. If I misunderstood the question, and you're asking, do we have to warn that there's wires at the top? That's easily observable.
No, my question is, I'll try just once more. But
I'm sorry.
Not my question to pose a chemistry. Under your argument that you don't have to warn of the precise danger that indeed caused the young man's death, you don't have to warn of arcing because you warned of electricity. And the electricity is dangerous. I mean, to touch it's dangerous, so arcing is subsidiary to that. Why is it the mere fact that it's a high tower, and therefore it's dangerous, isn't that sufficient? And you don't even need to mention electricity at all. It's just a high tower. It's dangerous to be up there to begin with. So the fact that there was electricity or not is irrelevant.
Well, I think the warning goes to the knowledge of what is up there in addition to it being tall. So that, in essence, you give that warning. These are electrical wires. They're high voltage electrical wires. Electricity in itself is a different kind of hazard from height.
So you do, and so one you do need to warn of the specific danger.
Well, if we're talking about danger or a specific cause of an injury, yes, I would agree with that. In this case, we're warning of electricity. The danger in this case. I don't think we have to warn of the height because that's readily apparent.
The hidden danger.
That electricity is a hidden danger? Well,
the hidden danger of arcing.
Well, I have to disagree that it's a hidden danger.
Well, if an engineer didn't know and I didn't know and I dare say my colleagues didn't know, how can that possibly be well known?
Well, since it's been discussed, since 1922, I just have a really hard time understanding that it's. Well, in closing, I just...
Well, your time's up,
thank you. Okay.
Somebody asked a question. Thank you. That concludes the argument in the second clause. The foregoing clauses will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshals will adjourn the court.
All right. Okay.